Good morning. It's good to see you here this morning. When we first got here, I thought, well, this is going to be one of those Sundays when everybody is out of town. People don't seem to come to Allen for their holidays for some reason. I'm sure where my brother preaches out in the country, where it seems like everybody in the Houston area that's a Christian has a piece of property, kind of a weekend place, where he preaches. I'm sure they've got a standing room only crowd this morning. Ours tends to be a little bit the other way. Our crowd tends to be a little bit smaller, and indeed you can look around and see that there are a number of people who are not with us, most of them out of town, some that are not feeling well. But we do have a number of guests with us this morning. And we're happy that for whatever reason you are here, that you have come our way. And we hope that you benefit from your time spent with us this morning as we sing songs of praise to God, pray to God, remember His Son in the Lord's Supper, and then study His Word this morning. We're going to go to the book of Ecclesiastes this morning, and we're going to look at the idea of life under the sun. Ecclesiastes is written by King Solomon, and it was Solomon's observation of life. It is the idea of life under the sun is strictly from an earthly standpoint. And what it appears that Solomon does is he kind of tries to take God out of the equation for a moment and say, let's just look at what life is. What, you know, how are things going in life? And when you look at what Solomon says, you see there's not a whole lot of difference between what Solomon says and what we ourselves experience in life today. It is as if Solomon is reading the evening news and saying, these are the events that are going on. You look around and this is what you will see. Asaph in Psalm chapter 73 describes life kind of without God in the first part of that chapter. And it's kind of, he takes it personally. This is what's happening to me who is good, as opposed to what's happening to other people who are bad. Solomon, it doesn't seem, he doesn't seem to take it personally. He just looks around. He stands on the street corner and sees life, or sits in the mall on a bench and sees the people walking by and observes their lives. Maybe he has a newspaper and he is reading the news. Maybe he is watching one of these news channels and seeing what's going on. And so he is looking at life. He's observing life just as it exists on this earth, kind of without looking at it through the lens of eternity. And from a purely earthly perspective, this is what Solomon says life is about. He says in chapter 1 and verse 14, I've seen all the works that are done under the sun. Indeed, all is vanity and grasping for wind. And so he says, all of these things that are going on, people busying themselves with life, working and hobbies and all of those things together, he says he looks at all of this, and what he sees is vanity. He sees emptiness in it. He says it's like you're trying to grab the wind. Anybody able to grab the wind? No, the wind goes right through. And he says that's kind of what life is like. It's an empty attempt. And so that's what he is saying in a general, overall sense. Now, why does Solomon say this? Why does he see life as something that's just kind of empty? Well, in chapter 3 and verse 16, he says, moreover, I saw under the sun, in the place of judgment, wickedness was there, and in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. He sees wickedness as rampant. Instead of everybody being righteous, as you would think everybody would want to be, he says no. He sees really that wickedness, as far as this earth is concerned, seems to just be ruling the day. There seems to be a lot more wickedness in the world than there is righteousness. And again, you look in the paper, you watch the news, or just observe life in its reality, and really that's what you see, that wickedness is all over the place. In chapter 4, in verse 1, he says, "Then I returned and considered all the oppression that is done under the sun. And look, the tears of the oppressed, but they have no comforter. On the side of their oppressors there is power, but they have no comforter." And so he sees the oppressed and the oppressor. And what he sees in this is the oppressor seems to have it a lot better than the oppressed. The oppressor has his power that he can use in order to really make life better for himself. But the oppressed don't have that power, and they don't have someone who has that power that will come to their aid. And so the oppressor seems to win the day. In chapter 5, beginning at verse 13, he says, "There is a severe evil which I have seen under the sun." And he talks about evil. And he talks about evil quite a few times in the book of Ecclesiastes. He's not necessarily talking about moral evil that people are doing. He is talking about something that is not good. He sees something that really, as far as life is concerned, is bad. And here's what he sees. He says, "There's a severe evil which I've seen under the sun. Riches kept for their owner to his hurt. But those riches perish through misfortune when he begets a son. And there is nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came. And he shall take nothing from his labor which he may carry away in his hand." What Solomon sees in this passage is what we all see. When a person dies and they're lying in their casket, all of the riches that they have accumulated do not go with them. And most of the time, even the jewelry that they're wearing, do you notice? Most of the time, the ring and whatever other jewelry, before they close the casket, they take all of that jewelry off and give it to a survivor. Because they understand that you can't take those things with you into eternity. Whatever you have accumulated in this life, if you do not lose it before you lie in the casket, you're going to lose it when you go into eternity. And so what riches men gained in life, he sees that if they haven't already lost, every one of us are going to lose those things in death. And in chapter 8, in verse 14, and this is particularly difficult for us to understand sometimes, there is a vanity which occurs on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. You'd expect the wicked to suffer, but he says, what I see is that there are righteous people who suffer as well. Their end seems to be what we would consider to be the end of the wicked. And then again in verse 14, again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. You would expect the righteous to be successful. But he says he looks at life and he sees that the wicked prosper and the righteous suffer. Bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people. He sees that in life under the sun. And then he sees in chapter 9 and verse 2, everybody dies. All things come alike to all. One event happens to the righteous and the wicked. Now, the righteous and the wicked may not have much in common in this life, but there is one thing that they all have in common. It is appointed for all men to die, says the Hebrew writer in Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 27. And that is what he is noting here. One event happens to the righteous and the wicked. I have water up here. I'm just not going to use it yet. To the good, the clean, and the unclean. To him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. That is, to people who, we would say, who go to church on Sunday, and to people who don't. To people who worship God, to people who don't. To people who offer to God of their bounty, and to people who don't. In the end, as far as death is concerned, they are the same. As is the good, so is the sinner. He who takes an oath is he who fears an oath. Everybody dies. And I tell you, you can open a casket and you can look at this person who is lying in the casket. And you cannot, if you don't know what their life has been, you cannot make a judgment based on the person in the casket as they lie there, whether their life was good or bad. Because everybody looks the same when they are in a casket. And so this is what Solomon sees. And I don't think Solomon is necessarily just saying this in order to say life's a bummer. He's certainly not being positive, is he? What he's saying is, this is reality. When you take God out of the equation, take eternity out of the equation, this is what life looks like. And so here are Solomon's conclusions. One, from a purely earthly perspective, there doesn't seem to be much difference between good and bad people. Doesn't seem to be much incentive to be good at all. If bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people, just like bad things happen to bad people and good things happen to good people, good and bad happen to both good and bad. If that is true in life, and if it is true that when a person's lying in a casket, you can't tell the difference whether they were good or bad, then, you know, what is life? And that's why he says life is empty and life is vain. When you look at it from purely an earthly standpoint, without the benefit of looking at it from the standpoint of eternity. And so that means that in order to get a clear understanding of the difference between good and bad people, we must look beyond the earthly perspective. We must look with an eternal perspective in mind. It's interesting. I'm going to have to drink some of this water. Just bear with me, please. I'm actually getting better in my allergies. This has been a bad allergy season for me, but I am getting better. I took a Claritin a little bit late this morning. Hopefully that'll help. What I want you to notice in the book of Ecclesiastes is that Solomon keeps going back to God to help explain life under the sun. And that's interesting to me. It seems that what Solomon is beginning, as he begins his look, he's saying, let's look at life without God. But then he starts looking at life and he starts mentioning God. Starts looking at life on earth, and he mentions life in eternity as well. Example of that, chapter 8. Go to chapter 8. And it's found throughout here. It's interesting to me how many times you find reference to God, how many times you find reference to eternity in the book of Ecclesiastes. when Solomon is trying to make a point about life without focusing on eternity. Chapter 8 and verse 10. Then I saw the wicked buried, who had come and gone from the place of holiness. Come and gone from the place of holiness. That's the guy that went to church. He went to church. He came back from church. It says he looked at this person, and he says about him that not only did he go to church there in chapter 8 and verse 10, but he says, and they were forgotten in the city where they had also gone. Let me back up. I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of holiness. This is the person who was something different on Sunday than they were on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. On other days, they were wicked. But then they came to the house of God, to the holy place, on the day that they were going to worship God. Hypocrisy is what he is describing here. And he says, and they were forgotten in the city where they had so done. That word forgotten there, it can be translated that they had been basically celebrated in the city where they had come. It could also mean that their evil deeds were forgotten. They came to church, they had friends who were faithful to God, and then they die, and everybody is celebrating their lives, forgetting what kind of people they were Monday through Saturday, celebrating them and their life. And he says that's a vain thing. We see that today, don't we? You ever been to a funeral where the preacher got up and he said, now let me tell you something about old Jim here. Jim was one sorry individual. And aren't we all glad that he's dead? You ever been to a funeral where that was said? I've been to funerals of some awfully sorry people where that could have been said, but it wasn't. They emphasize the good things about this person. And this is what Solomon is seeing here. And he says, this is vanity. This is emptiness. This doesn't make sense. And then he says in verse 11, because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men are fully set on them to do evil. He says, let me tell you why that happens. Let me tell you why a person is wicked Monday through Saturday, and then on Sunday they're singing praises to God and appearing to be righteous. He says, let me tell you why that happens. It happens because what they're doing Monday through Saturday, God hadn't struck them dead for. And they feel like they're getting away with it. It does seem kind of vanity, doesn't it? A person lives wickedly all their life except on Sunday. And then they die and their praises are sung by the folks who are remembering their life. And everybody forgets the wickedness they have done. When you think about that, that is kind of an emptiness. But notice what he says in verse 12. Though a sinner does evil 100 times and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before him. I think what he's saying here is, man, you cannot look at that from a strictly earthly standpoint. You have to look at life from an eternal standpoint to see that while, yes, that is an emptiness, that is a vanity to praise the dead wicked, it doesn't mean they're going to get away with it. And he talks about their days being prolonged. Even if they live a long life, even if they're lying in the casket at 120 years old, and they've lived a pretty earthly, financially good life, he says you can't judge their life by the fact that that God hasn't come down hard on them, that God didn't strike them down with lightning a long time ago, that people didn't put them to death a long time. He said, you can't judge their life in that way. He says something interesting in verse 13. He talks about this person whose days are prolonged, that is, they live a long life. He says, but it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not fear before God. You see, their life seems to be long. And Solomon says, no, not really. Their good life, whatever good they may have had, whatever financial prosperity or happiness they may have had in that life, it doesn't follow them into eternity. And we have to look at life that way. So that then you come to the end of the book of Ecclesiastes. After Solomon has looked at life under the sun. And here is his conclusion again in verses 13 and 14. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is man's all. The King James says, for this is the whole duty of man. With the idea that's man's work. That word duty was added in there by the translators. What he's saying is, this is man's all. This is what a man's life is all about. If you miss this aspect of life, you've missed it all. Why? Because if you miss heaven in eternity, you have missed it all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Okay, so Solomon says here that once we understand the eternal consequences of life under the sun and are committed to spiritual good, then how shall we live our physical lives? What does it mean to first of all understand that life has a spiritual aspect to it too? Life has an eternal aspect. That when we die, we're not like Rover, dead all over. Our works follow us. Our life follows us into eternity. Understanding that then, and we've decided to be good, to be righteous before God, we're going to read our Bibles, we're going to try to the best of our ability to be obedient to those things that God has given us to do. We're going to live by faith in God. Then what? How do we look at earthly life? Well, he says in chapter 9, verses 7 and 8. He says, go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart. For God has already accepted your works. And again, this is looking at the person who understands spiritual things and who is living their life in those spiritual concepts, who's striving to be obedient to God. He says, once you have done that, God has accepted that in you, then what do? He says, you eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart. Verse 8, let your garments always be white, and let your head lack no oil. You enjoy life. You ever known people who just can't seem to enjoy life? They're good folks. They strive to righteousness, but they're just miserable because they can't enjoy the things that God has given to them. Solomon says, don't be like that. God has blessed you with these things. Enjoy those things. He's given you all these things to enjoy. Why aren't you enjoying those things? Live your life and live it with joy and use those things that God has given to you to help you to enjoy this life. Chapter 9 and verse 9. Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. Life can get pretty hard, can it? Life can have all of these moments of vanity and emptiness to them. Here's what Solomon says. In those times, it sure is good to have somebody standing by your side that is helping you with those things, that is encouraging you as you go through those things, that's helping you to enjoy this life. What he says is, love your marriage companion and build a life of joy together. And man, that's important. It is amazing to me how many people are miserable in their marriages. They have done what God said was the good thing to do. It's not good for a man to be alone, and boy, howdy, isn't that true? And so they take for themselves a companion that is going to help them. And instead of loving that companion and being joyful in that love with that companion, life becomes a thing of misery for them. Husband is miserable, wife is miserable, kids are miserable. Why? If you take them for a husband or you take them for a wife, love them in all of those ways that love is described in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Love them and love them to death and find joy in them. Solomon says that's what you need to do. Use those things that you have and love that person that you have. And then finally, in verse 10, live your life to the fullest. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. Live life to the fullest, he says. You're alive, don't live like you're dead. And I'll tell you, there are a lot of people in this world who are living like they are already dead. And Solomon says, don't do that. Use the things you have. Love the companion you have. And enjoy life. Live life. Don't live like you're dead. And that's what Solomon tells us. And that's Solomon's conclusion here. And so then in chapter 2 in verse 24, really the whole point of this thing, he says in verse 24 of Ecclesiastes chapter 2, nothing is better for a man than he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. God has given you life to enjoy. Enjoy it. That doesn't mean that everything's going to happen good all the time. People are going to get sick. People are going to suffer tragedies. People are going to lose loved ones. All of those things are part of life. But through it all, strive to love your life, to enjoy your life. In those good times, enjoy those good times. Don't let all of this other stuff that's happening in life under the sun, don't let that destroy your joy. Watch Fox News or MSNBC or CNN or whatever you want to watch on the news, if that's your thing. Don't let it destroy your joy. Don't let it keep you from loving life. And that's Solomon's lesson for us this morning. Perhaps there's someone with us this morning who's not yet been obedient to the will of God. You've looked at life from the earthly standpoint, but you've not stopped to consider it from the heavenly standpoint. You've got to look at life through the heavenly standpoint. Now, perhaps you have, and yet you've not done anything about it yet. Jesus in Mark 16, verse 16, encourages us to look at life through the eternal standpoint. And he says, here's the conclusion of that. He who believes and is baptized will be saved. Do you want to be saved? You want eternity to be good for you? You want to spend eternity in heaven? Believe in Jesus Christ. Make him your Lord and your Savior. Be baptized to have your sins washed away and his precious blood be raised from that watery grave of baptism to walk in newness of life and then live faithfully till death and receive that crown of life. Can we help you as you work out your salvation this morning? If we can, let us know how we can by coming forward right now while together we stand and sing.